Care Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, some students and parents in Cara and Kill were left in limbo yesterday morning as the buses for secondary schools in Naas didn't show up. Speaking to KFM, parents have explained how their children were left stranded on the side of the road with no way to school. Now, joining me on the line now is one parent, let's call her Lorraine, not her real name. And Lorraine, welcome to the programme. You might explain what happened yesterday. You're a parent out in Cara.
That's right. Well, what happened was my son, as normal, was standing out on the road. We're living a country setting from 7:20, which would be normal. The bus is due around 7:30, but sometimes it can come early and sometimes it can come late. So I'm there going, generally, there'd be no more than a 5 to 20 minute wait on a normal morning. So he stood out, and as I was gone to work for 7 o'clock, and my husband was also had left at 7:30, and he rang me and he said he'd been on the road about 45-50 minutes at this stage, and he said that the bus hadn't turned up, and he believed he hadn't missed it because he could see children maybe a kilometre up the road standing out as well, and he thought maybe they disappeared, that they'd gotten a lift with someone, and he was getting worried. So I had told him to stay put in case it did come, in case there had been, you know, an accident or something like that, but I would make my way out, back out and collect him. So yeah, he was there for, I suppose, about an hour and 5 minutes in total, worrying about getting to school, but I got him into school anyway. But I rang all sorts of numbers and school bus transport and the bus operator and bus errand, and no one could give me a reason why it had happened. Just that I was told from the school or the bus operator that there was no bus service, that there wasn't you know, the bus wasn't coming and it wouldn't be there that evening, and they couldn't tell me anymore.
So, okay, so yeah. We contacted the bus operator and bus Aaron as well, and we haven't got an official response, but sources tell us that the bus didn't show up due to unforeseen circumstances in Cara and in Kill. But I know parents were wondering why there was no contingency in place for another bus to come in, and maybe why you weren't notified of this beforehand. You had to go and find the information yourselves, Lorraine.
Yeah, I suppose it was these, you know, things happen, and it mightn't be great that, you know, the bus service isn't going to be provided, but then no notification, because yesterday evening there was no bus again, and I was down the country with work, and my husband was in the city with work, and we don't have any family around, and my son was left, you know, that he was going to have no way home. He would have went to school with maybe a Revolut card to have money to pay a taxi, but I just had to send him to the local library and wait it out until I got back up to Naas at 5:30 yesterday evening. So it was those kind of things, you know, you could put something in place if we had known. But for no one knew. And that was the thing. I'm sure a lot of children got cut out. Parents were gone to work. Children were on the road for long periods of time. I did hear in the village of Cara itself, you know, children were drifting from one bus stop to the other because there's two buses. And obviously neither of them came. So there was a lot of confusion.
We'd also been contacted by some parents who told us that some students had to walk to school from Kill or Cara into Naas because the bus didn't come. And I know one school principal contacted parents yesterday afternoon to say that the bus won't be collecting students from the schools in Naas yesterday evening, and therefore parents had to make alternative arrangements. It's our understanding as well, Lorraine, the bus did show up this morning, but you didn't take any chances.
No, I just felt too exposed if the same thing happened again. So this morning I brought my son in the car with me to work, and he sat out in the car for an hour, and then I left work for a short period of time to bring him in. I just felt I couldn't risk the same thing happening, because I think I rang five different numbers with Bus Éireann and school bus transport yesterday, and no one could even give me a number to put me in contact with the right person. So I didn't know if it was going to happen again. And it wasn't the principal of my son's school that, so we never got any message. How they knew, I'm not sure, but I did try vigorously yesterday to get some answers. Was it just a blip on a day, or was it going forward? So, yeah, I don't know what bus turned up this morning, but there was a bus this morning.
I'm sure it's very, very stressful, Lorraine, when you're in work and you're being told by your son that the bus hasn't shown up and they're just left standing now on country roads.
Yeah, and he was, like, frozen. He's a very conscientious young man, so, like, he wanted to go to school, but that's it. I was lucky enough to be in a position that I could leave my work, but I'm sure there's not everyone, or I could have, I was heading down the country, I could have already been gone. And I'm not sure what I was going to be able to do for him if I was in, you know, the south of the country and my husband was in the capital. You know, what provisions, apart from having to go back into the house and stay there for the day, which isn't ideal. Yes, so I guess it was just no one turning up and no notification, because we do apply for the bus ticket using an email, and obviously this affected three routes yesterday. So there would have been an email address connected with each child that has a bus ticket for that. That maybe they could have even sent out an email, not saying that everyone would got it, but maybe some would have gotten it and they could have passed on the word, but just nothing. Yeah, and that vulnerability when you do rely on a service that has, you know, always been there day in, day out, you don't think, okay, if I am away with work and my husband's away with work, that our child will be left stranded.
And I understand, and I know that parents understand these things happen, and we are told that it's because of unforeseen circumstances. And a listener has texted in to say there's a shortage of drivers in some of those companies. Staff calling in sick or a lack of spare buses can result in a shortage of buses on the route. That's understandable, but what parents are saying is we need to be told about that, you know, because it's not acceptable for all of our children to be just left standing on the side of the road waiting on a bus to come. So if a bus isn't coming, or if somebody has called in sick, should there not be a system where a message is sent out to parents, where an email is sent out to parents? By the way, you might need to make alternative arrangements here because the bus won't be coming this morning, rather than, you know, students, second level students, standing around scratching their heads as to what's happening. Listen, Lorraine, thanks for joining us this morning. As we say, we understand that the bus did arrive this morning, and it was just yesterday morning and yesterday evening that was affected. Lorraine, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us. Let's go up to Selbridge and Leixlip then because Fianna Fáil councillor Bernard Caldwell is on the line to discuss local issues that he's been raising with Kildare County Council. Bernard, good morning to you.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. You want to Kildare County Council or Inland Waterways to remove the debris that has gathered on the Rye River Bridge on the main street in Leixlip. Has that happened yet?
No, look, it will happen, and it won't happen until the levels of the water goes down and then they'll remove it. Because back, I think it was in 1954, there was a flood and big, you know, a lot of big branches come down and to block the river. So, yeah, they are going to do it, which is quite good. There's a lot of debris there that gathered up over the last couple of years.
Right, who's going to do it then? Is it Inland Waterways or the council?
Well, I judging by, I think the council might take responsibility for it. But look, it doesn't matter who does it as long as it's done. And the engineer told me it will be done. So that's, I don't care who does it. It will be done.
Did you get an update on the installation of traffic lights or a zebra crossing on Captain's Hill? That's between Avondale and St Mary's Park.
Yeah. Look, it's not going to happen overnight. But as soon as money becomes available, they will put some kind of safe crossing there between Avondale and St Mary's Park, where there's a bus stop now at the moment. A lot of senior citizens cross there on a regular basis when they get off the buses and even come to the shops. So, yeah, the engineer told me that he will do it and like that. But I think it'll be sooner rather than later, and that'll be good.
OK, and the traffic still heavy there around Captain's Hill, Bernard. Any short-term solutions, do you think, to alleviate that?
It depends on what you mean. I don't mind sitting in my car for 5 or 10 minutes. You know, I mean, you know, whenever it comes to one time, there's going to be delays. It's never that bad. And I live in the Captain's Hill, but some people just can't wait 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes to have to go down the lights and have to be green. But look, there is a plan and a new plan going to be put in place. But look, personally, I don't really have many problems with it. But, you know, some people have different ideas than I have.
Any updates on the works for the all-inclusive playground at the Amenity Centre in Leixlip?
Well, yeah, there is. The tendering situation has nearly come to a complete, and now they're tendering for the car park. But it's going to be, no, I definitely thought it would be in October when we would have seen this car park, this playground. Now it looks as if it's going to be probably early next year. But there's lots of different niggly problems regarding parking, car parking and so on. But the tendering for the actual people who are going to do the work is done. So now they're at the stages, they'll have to go and select the type of equipment and so on that they're going to do. But look at it, it's going on for so long that, you know, it's kind of annoying really. But look, all we can do is hang in there and get it and keep the pressure on, which we're doing. So, you know, that's what. Just before I go, we had a meeting in Leeds at this time, in the old town council office. It's now Newtown House, the youth centre. And I just say thank you to the people in the youth centre for providing us with tea in their restaurant. And anybody around the county area, you're in around the morning, anything between 9:30 and 1:30 every day. There's a lovely restaurant in there and plenty of space. And the ladies in there are doing their best to make it work. And it will work. It's beautiful. So we'd like to say thank them for allowing us to go in and use their facilities.
Whereabouts is it, Bernard?
Do you know where the library is on?
Yeah.
The building beside that, Newtown House, is where we used to have our town council office. But it was an extension plant for there about 10, 15 years ago. And the youth centre use it now. But they've opened up a cafe in it. I have to say it's excellent. And I hope they get good support because there's a great crew in there and it's plenty of space. And you can park beside it.
Very good, very good. Come here, we've a couple more issues, Bernard. We got a message in there from a listener, and I think you might be aware of it, around Rye River Park and Duncarrig. Have there been trees cut down there, Bernard, or is that a sensitive issue?
I kind of only know a little bit about it. It's kind of dangerous to say too much around that area, what's going on there, but
right.
It's all to do with, you know, I'm not going to say because I don't know enough about it.
Right, OK, there was a message came in on that, just wondering what happened to the trees around that area. OK, finally then, the wonderful barn, any update on that? You bring that up every meeting?
Yeah, we're making a steady progress on the wonderful barn, and I'm quite happy with the progress that's been made. And, you know, I think this time next year you'll see parts of it. They're going to, later on this year, re-slate the size of it and do the wall gardens around it. So, look, there is work starting to go on at the wonderful barn, and I'll be quite happy with that, actually, now. And hopefully, you know, we get re-elected in June and we keep the pressure on there and just keep an eye on it. But there is work we've done there and, you know, we'd like to see it quicker, but unfortunately that's not the case. But look, as I said, I'm happy enough with it.
All right. Fianna Fáil councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, that is Bernard Caldwell. Thanks, Bernard, for joining us and good morning. I see a new report is out today. Ireland's housing crisis has been highlighted in a report assessing human rights in 155 countries by Amnesty International. The State of the World's Human Rights Report has noted that over 4,000 children are living in emergency homeless accommodation, while tens of thousands of young people are locked out of the housing market. Executive Director of Amnesty International, Stephen Bowen, says this means the government needs to take bolder and more decisive steps to solve the housing crisis, including a referendum on the right to housing. There's also a spotlight on Ireland's abortion services in the report. The organisation has called on the government to prioritise the implementation of recommendations contained in the abortion services review by Barrister Marie O'Shea, which was published last past year. On a global level, Amnesty International has accused big tech platforms of stoking conflict. The report warned that the breakdown of the rule of law is likely to accelerate with rapid advancement in artificial intelligence, which, coupled with the dominance of big tech, risks supercharging human rights violations if regulation continues to lag behind advances. So that's a new report out by Amnesty International. Another story that's big in the headlines today, by the way, is the fact that former DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson is due in court in the North this morning, charged with historical sex offences. He'll appear before Newry Magistrates Court after being charged last month. And from there, Andrew Loud has this report.
There is a large media presence outside Newry Magistrates Court as Geoffrey Donaldson appears before a judge for the first time in connection with the case. He was arrested and charged last month with 11 offences of an historical nature, including one count of rape. A 57-year-old woman has also been charged with aiding and abetting in connection with the offences. He resigned as DUP leader following his arrest last month and was also suspended from the party. He denies all the charges against him. Andrew Laird at Newry Magistrates Court.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, new research published by Mental Health Reform has found that men in prison face significant barriers to accessing mental health care. The report, entitled Mental Health Services and Supports in Prisons, Service Mapping and Reflections from Lived Experiences, highlights the need for increased funding to support prisoners experiencing mental health difficulties and addiction issues. Well, joining me this morning is Fiona Coyle, CEO of Mental Health Reform. Fiona, welcome to the programme again and good morning. This study, quite a comprehensive study. Why did you decide to undertake it?
Yeah, so I suppose it's increasingly recognised both globally but also in Ireland that many people in prisons experience mental health difficulties and often have a range of very complex needs. So in prison there's a really higher than average rate of people with severe and enduring mental health difficulties and also with addiction disorder and other kind of more mild to moderate difficulties. And regrettably, you know, what we've seen with other reports over the years that many individuals are still not receiving the supports and services that they require. One of the things that we were kind of re-identified was that no one really knew what are the range of supports and services being implemented in the prisons. So the report that we launched maps some of those mental health supports and services available in adult closed prisons. And as part of that, you know, we were in the prisons talking to men in custody who are accessing or trying to access services, as well as the staff providing services or providing the access to the services. So it was a really informed piece of research, you know, looking at, you know, what's there, what's the barriers, what's good, what's not working and what needs to be improved on.
More than 4,500 people are currently detained in the Irish prison service. There's a high rate of mental health difficulties among the Irish prison population. Many of those individuals severely affected by loneliness, drug misuse and overcrowding. And the question, I suppose, that you're trying to get at here, Fiona, is if they're getting adequate support and adequate services to address those issues.
Yeah, that's exactly the question. And I suppose what we were looking at is that, you know, our mental health policy. So when you look at mental health, you look at a kind of, there's a triangle, an upside down triangle that is often shown in range of tiered support. So, you know, you start at supports that are really, you know, low intervention, which can give someone support at where they feel, you know, where they initially reach out, where they may just need kind of some kind of once-off low-level counselling. They may just need information. And then as you move up to the tiers, you're looking at more specialised supports and then ultimately kind of on to like specialised kind of inpatient services. So in relation to prisons, that would be the Central Mental Hospital. And what we know from research is that the sooner people get support, so, you know, at those lower kind of non-specialised services and supports, the more of those that there are, the less likely that someone may move on to require that specialised services. And what we know from this report and others is that there are really long waiting lists for those specialised services, and that we are really failing individuals at the moment who are really in crisis, who are in prisons, who should not be in prisons because they're, you know, in a mental health crisis and they should be, you know, receiving the care and support in probably a hospital setting. So, you know, we were trying to look at the whole picture for this report to see, you know, what can be done and where do we need to put the emphasis and the investment going forward.
Like everything, Fiona, does it come back to a need for increased staffing, a need for increased funding?
Yeah, unfortunately there's no easy answers in terms of what can be done, but I think what we did identify was there's actually a range of kind of really cost-effective pieces that could be done to support individuals. So one of the things that came across, especially from the men who participated in interviews who are men in prisons, was that they felt that they could have been much better prepared. You know, their first time entering a prison system, they could have had more information beforehand that would have helped them prepare, and then it might not have been such a big shock, and, you know, their mental health may not have been impacted as much as it was. So things like that, things around, you know, they have prison TV, which reaches, you know, 4,500 people, putting more information on prison TVs. Also the role of the voluntary and community sector, you know, they play a really important role in delivering services. So the Samaritans, for example, are highlighted in our report as providing really vital services. And they're really cost-efficient way for, you know, small investment will get you a great return in terms of the outcome. So I think there, while, you know, obviously staff and recruitment is a huge issue, we know that recruitment across all health services is a huge barrier. So we need to try and look at what else can we do. So there's some of those suggestions in the report, looking at alternative pieces of work that could be done of course, doesn't replace, you know, some of those specialised services, but, you know, may help in the long term in getting people the right support at the right time.
And just finally, Fiona, we started the discussion by outlining that headline that the new research found that men in prison face significant barriers to accessing mental health care. Some people listening this morning might say that if you just broaden the discussion, that's replicated right across the country in every facet of society, trying to get access to mental health care, staffing shortages, long waiting lists, etc. So I know this report focuses on prisons, but it's not just confined to prisons.
No, you're completely right. And at Mental Health Reform, you know, that is our core mandate, is to advocate for, you know, better access and more investment into mental health services. And, you know, we're coming into a very important year. We're coming into a year that there may be an election. We don't know when that might be. But, you know, I'd urge people to make people who knock on their doors aware that mental health is a priority, because for too long in this country, mental health has always been something that has been kind of hidden, that people wouldn't talk about openly. But I think we're breaking down that barrier. But for it to be, you know, a political priority for the next government, the politicians need to be hearing it from the individuals on the doorsteps as well. So we'd urge people, you know, get involved with Mental Health Reform. We've lots of resources to help you make those points. But, you know, there's too many people being failed by services at the moment, right across the country. There's great services in some regions and there's very poor services in other regions, and we can't be reliant on that type of postcode lottery.
Fiona Coyle, CEO of Mental Health Reform, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.